Hello and welcome to the Attribution Marketing Podcast powered by LeadsRx. On today's episode, we have John McDonald from The Good, which is one of the leading conversion rate optimization agencies in the world. We are lucky to have John on the episode with us. So, John, first and foremost, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me today.
So if you would, just give us your career arc, and then we're going to dive into the meat and potatoes of this, but just tell us how you got into this position, the story behind The Good, and just your whole career arc in marketing and what led you to this position.
Yeah, well, I started out working in management consulting and running the interactive arm of a management consulting firm. And we would primarily use Flash more than anything else. So way back in the days, right? Because we could mold it to do whatever we wanted. We could make applications with it, et cetera. And, I really got into the understanding the customer journey and optimizing for the customer experience using Flash, where a lot of people would do things in Flash that were counterintuitive to the customer journey because they could, right? They would make, you know, wild animations, et cetera, as part of websites. You're just like, okay, calm it down. Let's focus on the customer journey. So that was where I spent a lot of my time and really cut my teeth into this world. And then started working more on e-commerce and optimizing for customer experience, led to me working and starting The Good, where, you know, we started out by working on mainly e-commerce websites. So we would help to build and launch e-commerce websites. I quickly found, as technologies like Shopify, et cetera, were coming out, commoditizing that platform industry, you needed less and less development skills. And I found that a lot of e-commerce brands did not care about the technology at the time. Now it's more common to care, but at the time they didn't care about the technology. I could have strung a string between two tin cans and they would have loved it, as long as it worked and processed orders, right? That was all they cared about. So I realized that we were entering a commodity. I needed to figure out what we were going to niche down and do. I interviewed all of our customers, key customers. I flew around the country for a couple of weeks, chatted with them all, found out that they all really hired The Good because we did continual optimization after we launched their site. And they clearly told me what I had assumed. We didn't care that you could build a website. We could hire anyone to build us a website. What we wanted was the fact that you would optimize that site after we launched it, and you had built that into every contract and made it a requirement. And I did that because I cared about the customer journey. And the best way to learn about that is to put it in front of consumers and have that conversation, see how people use it. So after a few long months of making that transition, we went all in on conversion optimization. And here we are about 15 years later. Helping brands to convert more of their visitors into customers and fulfilling our mission of eliminating all the bad online experiences until the good remain.
I like the tagline. I think it's a perfect fit for what you guys got going on. And it's always nice when it can be packaged up in that kind of cute short phrase. So kudos to that. I want to jump into your second point here. And I think it's really important because, you know, our audience is typically maybe an enterprise marketer or somebody who's spending, let's say, 50 minimum on a monthly basis, which, you know, is small budget to some, but pretty big budget to others. But I think kind of the approach to the iterative strategy and your method of optimization is what we want to dig into. So just talk to us about your method, the scientific method, and try to, you know, talk folks out of assuming there's a silver bullet out there that's going to solve all their problems. So tell us the real truth here.
Yeah, well, listen, the real truth is that copying your competitors and following checklists and looking at whatever anyone's saying on Twitter you should do and just implementing that stuff blindly is likely going to hurt more than it helps. And so it's really interesting. You know, I like to think of this as your brand is in a horse race and your brand needs to have blinders on that horse. And there's a reason that racehorses wear blinders. And it's because if they start looking left or right, that's where they're going to go. instead of straight at the goal of what they want, right? Which is to win the race and get to the end line the fastest. And I think we need to be thinking about it the same way as e-commerce marketers is, you know, the reality is we should not be looking at competitors for that silver bullet. We have no idea if it's that tactic that we want to copy is working for them. We don't know if we got opted into an A-B test and we're being, and they're testing it out and we got opted into the test pool. Like all of these are options. Also, just because one thing works for their customer base does not mean it's going to work for your customer base, right? And so it very rarely does you a benefit to copy. It really is much more of a disservice. So I highly recommend you don't copy competitors. And that includes just looking at checklists and assuming that 101 tactics on a spreadsheet checklist that you found on Twitter or whatever is going to work. It's very unlikely to do that. What you need to do instead is talk to your customers. Start with your customer base. How are they using your site? What are they looking for? What challenges are they having? And if you do that, then you're pretty much going to win because I guarantee you most of your competitors are not.
So that's almost the Amazon, you know, ignore the competition, focus on the customer. Is that kind of same lesson here that you're suggesting, or is there a different spin on it?
It's a very similar lesson in the sense that all that really matters is talking to your customers. And so this could be done in a couple of different ways. I mean, let's say you're a SMB, you're a small brand, you're just starting out, right? Take your laptop and go to Starbucks and get the next person in line and say, I'll buy your coffee if you, while the barista is making it, you look at my website and I ask you to complete a task and you just tell me what you're thinking as you go through it. I guarantee you this will work. You'll find, you might get some no's, but you'll find a lot of people who will do it and you're going to learn a lot. Or you could go up all the way up into the larger brands and you could work with a company like The Good where we run user testing, you know, to understand how people engage with brands and you know, where the quantitative data like analytics, heat maps, click maps, scroll maps, all of that is going to tell us what people do, right? It's very clear to see what paths people are taking through your site, where they're dropping off, et cetera. But you really don't know why. Most brands are guessing at why. And that's why they go to their competitors because they're like, oh, well, I know we have this problem. How's our competitor solving that problem? Instead, what they should do is take that why and look for qualitative data. Go take it to your consumers and ask them and observe them with their questions. When you do user testing, you're asking people to, you know, complete a task on your website while they're talking out loud about what they're thinking. So what you're going to get here is, oh, well, okay, you told me to go buy, I just got off a phone call with somebody, a client that sells attachments for backhoes. Okay. Seems super specific, but really high price point. So they make, you know, they do really, really well. And so it's interesting, like they weren't asking folks in construction or farming what they needed. They were just using generic user testers before. And they were saying, I don't know what this piece is. Well, a construction person's coming in and knows exactly what that piece is they need. So it was a much different user journey, right? So you got to find the right people. And if you just look at your competitors, you're not going to get that.
So one of the things that LeadsRx has always had as part of their brand is, you know, better data and data plus people equals the results. And I think that's kind of what you're referencing here in the sense that you could look at bounce rate and exit pages and all of that wonderful data, and it could lead you to make the wrong choice. If you're measuring the wrong audience, looking at the wrong time of day, wrong price point, all those things. So maybe just do a little bit on the difference between qualitative and quantitative and maybe where you put your chips. You know, are you 50-50 between the two or are you all on the customer side? Go ahead.
Well, I think that I'm 100% in on customers, but you need to understand both the qualitative and quantitative. Okay, so why is that? Well, the quantitative should give you clues for where you need to dive deeper on the qualitative. Okay, so if you're looking at analytics, you're looking at click maps, scroll maps, you're going to start noticing patterns and it's going to start raising questions. The risk is you're going to want to answer those questions yourself. You're going to say, I know my product so well that this is what's happening. I should just fix it this way. That's what 99% of brands do. But that's also where they fail because they're guessing. So what you really need to do then is take that and take it to consumers and ask them and not ask them the specific question, right? It's kind of like comparative, like political polling. You don't want to just ask the question in political polling. You want to kind of ask it in a way that's not leading. You don't want to influence the results with the question you're asking, right? So with that, you really need to just say, hey, I need you to find the right attachment for your backhoe and add it to cart. Go. And then you have them talk out loud about that experience. You're going to learn so much. And the combination of those two, you're going to see, oh, yeah, he's dropping off at this pace, this space page, because there's no clear path to the next step in the funnel, right? You're going to learn a lot more that way, and it's going to fill in a lot more holes instead of guessing.
Well said. Let me ask you a specific question here. Every digital marketer, internet marketer, or even traditional marketer these days should be aware of the changes that are coming from Universal Analytics and GA4. Mm-hmm. You seem like a very data-driven guy, optimization-driven guy. How are you going to get through that hurdle? What do you think people need to be looking at? Does it matter? Does it matter, and why?
I think that it matters less than what people are thinking right now. Here's the reality of it. It does open up some more opportunity to be on GA4. What I mean by that is Google has stopped updating Universal. They're not going to add any new features there. Is there feature parity? No, not right now. There just isn't. But the benefit to moving over to GA4 now is that you start building up trend lines. And that's really what you should be making decisions on anyways. If you're making a decision on one day or one week of data, you're not going to make an informed decision. So you really want that trend line of as long as you can possibly have. So go into GA4 and set up the new conversion metrics, do those things that are going to help you start collecting some data. And you can always go back and change it later. You can go back and alter some of that, add new views, et cetera. The reality is, why it has less of an effect than what most people think is Google has done a great job with scare tactic on this. They've done a great job of having countdown timers and doing everything else and saying, hey, this is going to be over. You have limited time. I couldn't even tell you the number of websites I forgot I even had that I just don't do anything with anymore, that I got GA emails like, you better upgrade. And I'm like, crap, I don't even know if I can find the FTP password for that site. How am I going to go and change this? The reality is, like, I think Google has made a big deal of this because they need you to change. And they realize it's a free product and a lot of people aren't fully diving into the data. So they're just pushing you to do it. I think what's more disappointing likely for brands is that Google Optimize is sunsetted. So you can't really use GA data anymore to directly link up with your optimization efforts. Now, there are third parties out there. Convert.com is one we recommend that does a great job integrating with GA4. But the reality is you probably... it's one piece of data. If you're relying just on Google Analytics to make decisions, then, you're not making very informed decisions. It's the reality.
That's a fair point. I think, maybe I should have teed this up a little bit better in the question itself, but we have a lot of traditional advertisers, broadcasters, radio folks that are not getting that digital click. And with GA4, as far as we can tell, and we don't need to get too far into the weeds, but there's no mechanism to determine location, device, and IP address. So you're sort of losing the metrics that you need in order to determine that this ad at 8:17 a.m. in the Chicago market led to this many visits to my site and this many conversions. But I'm, you know, I'll throw the question your way. In a world where you can't answer that question, I don't want to put you on the spot or you don't have that data, how would somebody optimize, say, a radio or a TV campaign if you can't truly know, okay, this big spike at this time across time zones, across creative, across a bunch of different metrics, it's just not available in the broadcast world. Go ahead.
Right. There have been a lot more attribution tools that have come out that are much more helpful now. We focus once somebody gets to the site, converting them. But I can tell you that data is really helpful for us to understand what pages we should be optimizing the most. What's that journey like? Did they see a TV ad and then came to the site? Well, if they did, we need to make sure that messaging aligns, right? We need to make sure that whatever was promised in that TV ad is on the site. Well, now, unfortunately, you know, the days of having GA be your all-in-one tool that was free, I think Google is just reining that back in. It's why there are sunsetting things like Optimize and whatnot, because it costs a lot of money to keep those things going and to process that much data. And unfortunately, not many brands would sign up for Analytics 360. So Google, well, you know, they're making some money on it, but nowhere near to cover the cost of the billions of brands who are using GA for free.
Well said. Fair enough. So I think let's get more back into your world, which is, you know, I'm looking at, I don't know if this is an actual chapter in the book, but you basically have a point here that once the visitors are on your site, stop marketing to them. To me, that flies in the face of remarketing and add to cart, and you left this behind. So just talk us through how you're able to take that stance and defend it.
Yeah. Well, look, I think it's in the name there that, and I actually, you know, wrote a whole book on that. My first book was called Stop Marketing, Start Selling. And the idea behind that was that everybody in the e-commerce world was focused on getting people to their site, and they deploy those same tactics once somebody gets to the site. You have to take a different mindset once somebody gets to the site. And that's where conversion optimization truly comes in. It's, you know, whatever got them to the site is not going to get them to purchase. It's just not. It's a different mindset. It's a different tactic. It's different needs at that point, right? Marketing is about driving the lead to you. It's about generating awareness. Once somebody gets on your site, the last thing that a consumer wants to see is a video about the founder extolling the virtues of my company. What they really want to see is, are you going to solve my pain or need that I have as a consumer? And if you are, I want to convert, right? I want to solve that pain or need as quickly and easily as possible. Those are the only two reasons anybody is at a website that is not like a Facebook or someplace Instagram. They're just going to hang out, right? If you are at an e-commerce website, you believe that brand can solve a pain or need that you have. And if you determine they can, you want to make that purchase as quickly and easily as possible and get on with your life. So that's really the premise behind it. And if you understand that, then you can improve. You're going to want to improve your customer journey.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It's not, you know, I think a lot of folks that we run into have sort of mistargeted or, you know, misorganized groups of folks depending on where they're at in that funnel. And you end up showing somebody either a discount offer that didn't need it or wasting your money on a click, interrupting somebody who didn't, you know, wasn't really qualified to be there in the first place. So I think if I'm picking up what you're putting down, you know, you got to make that transition between raising awareness and starting to close the deal. And if I'm understanding you correctly, you want your UX and your UI, the messaging, to facilitate the closing of that deal as quickly as possible, as opposed to, like, you know, selling the features and benefits of the widget.
Yeah. And a lot of brands, even, you know, I gave the example a second ago, but they talk about themselves. And the challenge is, you know, they like to put in their main navigation things like about us, our history, et cetera. And it's like, as a consumer, I'm thinking, I don't care about you. I'm here for me, right? So unless your history or whatever is going to help me make a decision and influence my purchase, I don't really care. So here's, you know, most brands continue to do that type of marketing on the site. And what I'm a firm believer of and what I've seen work over 15 years of optimizing sites is that it has the opposite effect. Now, where should that content be? Because let's be honest, a lot of marketers are going to have a hard time winning that battle, even if they do side with me. Put that content where it's going to be helpful. What do I mean by that? Well, on a product detail page, perhaps you put the history of the company and how it influenced this product. Or you say, hey, you know, like there are brands that do outdoor gear and they say things like, you know, this tent, we came up with this tent because we were, you know, on a camping trip and we had this problem and we needed to solve it. Great. That gives me more information to make a decision, right? And gives me an idea of the brand and makes me feel closer to the brand. That is helpful marketing. Unfortunately, most people will just put up a video saying, you know, we make the best tents and it's so high quality and, you know, don't you just believe us, basically? And that's unhelpful, right? It's marketing. It's not something that is going to help close the deal.
So let's do a 2-for-1 here. You know, I see you have a note about discounting, and I'm sure you have some strong feelings about that. And then your sort of counter argument to that is more about building trust. So just talk to us about, you know, those two competitive forces there, because I think sometimes they're at odds. If people trusted you, you wouldn't need to discount the thing. It wouldn't be about price. So walk us through your opinions on, you know, trust versus discounting and how those strategies can be deployed.
Yeah, look, I'm a firm believer that nobody should be offering a discount. The easy button is to subtract. What I mean by that is to take a dollar or percentage off instead of adding value. So you want to increase trust, add more value, right? So how do you add value? Do a bundle, do a gift of purchase, offer free shipping over a certain threshold. You know, there's a lot of things that you could be doing to add more value. Free setup, free call to, you know, help you get set up on a highly technical product. There is a lot you could do that would be adding value there. Now, I'm a firm believer as well that trust matters. But a lot of brands think their trust needs to be at a 9 or a 10, when in reality, to make a purchase, probably only need to be at a 4. Right? So what you need to do with trust is, first of all, don't break that trust right up front. So many people, what they do is they get to a site and they're hit with a pop-up. And that pop-up is going to offer me a discount. I am already being told your products are not worth what you're charging. They're worth whatever that discounted price is. And so now I'm like, whoa, hold on. Do I trust this brand? Because they're trying to, you know, they're selling their product for $100, but I can get it for $75 because you're giving me $25 off or 25% off, whatever. And it just immediately in the mind of the consumer knocks you down a notch. And so really that's when you start having challenges that lead to trust is, you know, from the minute you get to the site. I like to think of it this way. Just because you can't see the consumer on the other side of the screen doesn't mean you shouldn't treat them like a human. And if you take these scenarios and you bring them into real life, let's think about a pop-up with a discount. I walk into a retail store, an associate jumps out in front of me with a clipboard and says 25% off everything in the store today, but you have to give me your email address right now to get it. I'm going to turn around and leave the store. I think I'd have a negative reaction. Everybody would. So why do we do that on an e-commerce website? It immediately loses trust. It immediately makes me think, whoa, what? No, like I want to solve my problem. I don't want to give you information. I don't even know if you can solve my problem yet. But guess what? If you can, I'm never going to pay full retail price again because I know I can come back and get 25% off by giving you that spam junk email address I have and, you know, creating 100 email addresses on Google and just always paying less.
Yeah, it's almost like you kind of show them that distrust. They almost show it back to you. You know, they're like, "Oh, okay, fine. I'm gonna make fake email addresses to game the system. Yep. You're treating me like this. I'm gonna treat you like that." Counterintuitive to most folks, I would say, and even folks that we deal with that sometimes discounting might be necessary because you have too much inventory or something. But there's a way to do it, and there's maybe a class of customers or a mechanism to deploy that that doesn't jeopardize the nth person that shows up. Is that, you know, maybe some strategies there. And so why don't we try to wrap up with maybe some of your highlights here of winning tests. What are some of the learnings that are either tried and true and have always been this way over your 15-year career, maybe some new ones that have come up in the past 6 months or 12 months that you think are surprising and not well known?
Well, I think the first is we always are testing things around eliminating pop-ups. So, you know, that's an easy one. You know, I see a lot right now of folks who are installing a ton of Shopify apps on their e-commerce store, and they're installing them only because they see competitors doing it. And one of the first things that we come in and do is, when we're working with a Shopify site like that, is we start testing eliminating each of those plugins one by one. What are these Shopify apps we can get rid of? And it has a couple of effects. The first is it ends up saving the brand money because they're not having to pay for all these apps. The second thing is you start realizing that they become a distraction for the consumer instead of a benefit. So we always like to audit those. You know, a couple of other really interesting tests we've seen lately, a lot around post-purchase. So we're seeing a lot of benefit right now, especially with economic conditions, right? A lot of people are looking to not spend as much money. So what happens is they go to buy something and they're kind of interested in an additional add-on product, but they're like, you know what? I'm going to save the money right now. I can always get it later. But post-purchase, when there's this moment of euphoria after you complete a purchase, I just solved my problem. I know it's going to be here soon. I feel good. The post-purchase regret hasn't set in yet. That comes, a little bit later. You can take advantage as a brand of that euphoria at that moment and say, okay, hey, you know what? You just, you're paying for shipping. If you add on this extra item right now, then we'll eliminate the shipping. Right. Again, how can you add value? Right. A good one we just saw that worked really, really well was you could buy a barbecue grill online and it can come in 100 pieces. But if you you can add on assembly, and when you add on assembly, we'll deliver it, hand deliver it for free, white glove service. And a lot of the upsell of that sold extremely well because consumers weren't going to pay for white glove, but once they realized that shipping was a sunk cost, right? It almost to them, it was like, oh, wow, now it's a value to get white glove and I don't have to worry about setting it up. And it works extremely well.
Well, great. Thanks for sharing that. I think, why don't you tell folks if they're interested in getting higher conversion rates, where can they go? How do they get in touch with you or find their way to the good?
Yeah, so thegood.com, pretty simple. Feel free, if you have any questions, just email me. I always give out my email address. Nobody ever abuses it, but it's John, J-O-N, @thegood.com. If you're interested, I know a lot of the stuff we talked about today is from my latest book, which is called Opting In to Optimization. If you just go to thegood.com/book, you can get paperback, hardcover, and ebook on there. And I think there's even an audio version up there as well. It's on Audible, Amazon, et cetera. I read the audio version. There's actually, if you listen to audio version, you get to hear me rap a little bit of Hamilton, which is embarrassing as hell. But hey, it's one of the upsells.
It's a value add. It's a value add. Perfect. Well, thanks so much, John, for being on this show. For all the folks that are listening to this or watching on YouTube, please follow the links below. Go check out John and the Good. I think he's underselling himself a little bit. If you even just sign up for the email newsletter that John puts out, it is highly valuable and it is spam free. So there's always something great coming out via the newsletter on the website. Gives a lot of this stuff away for free. So go check it out. And if you want to get better conversions off the same marketing spend and effort, go check out The Good. This is the Attribution Marketing Podcast, signing off.